Hey guys, what's up? It is week 331. Have a pretty big update for you. I'll probably just do an unboxing this time. Open it up. We'll look at it all together. But I have a bunch of reviews, so let's hop into the first one. And this one is from Arrow Video. And this is a 4K. And this is from 1993. This is directed by Brian De Palma. And this is Carlito's Way. Now, I probably haven't seen Carlito's Way since the mid-90s when it would play on television, you know, here and there. And I don't know if I've ever sat down and watched the entire Carlito's Way. But, of course, it stars Al Pacino and Sean Penn are the kind of big names. There's a bunch of other people in here as well, including Luis Guzman, John Leguizamo, and a slew of others. I think Penelope Miller is Ann Miller is also the kind of love interest. She's really good in this film as well. So it's kind of a classic crime tale, and De Palma is no stranger to that. Carlito, he gets released from the joint, as he would say in the film. He's very Pacino in this, very, very, very Pacino. And he kind of starts, he wants to go clean. His lawyer, Sean Penn, got him off. Sean Penn is sporting the most ridiculous wig in this. Not that it's bad, it's just his hair is crazy. Sean Penn is amazing in this film, as is, you know what, Pacino's really great as well. So Carlito gets released from prison. He wants to go straight. And it's pretty hard. He has a couple run-ins with the criminal element. He's kind of a legend amongst these parts. And he decides to take over a nightclub. Old loves kind of come back into the picture. And he has a dream of kind of escaping the life of crime. But his old kind of, his tendencies and who he is, they're going to hold him back. So Sean Penn does some horrible things that get Carlito in trouble. And the whole movie, you know what's happening because the opening, you know that his life is in very, very serious danger here. And you really don't know if old Carlito's going to make it. There's narration here and there through the movie. And his opening and ending kind of bookends the film. And Pacino in those narrations is really selling it hard. But a lot of the stuff throughout the movie is he seems very natural, even though he is doing kind of a an accent throughout the film, you know, in the vein, I wouldn't say similar to Tony Montana, but you know, kind of in that element, right? Not a similar character at all. But everybody in this kind of shines. It's really well shot, as you would expect. And it doesn't have a lot of the... It does have editing techniques that De Palma would use, but none of the ones that are like a lot of split diopters or split camera editing and stuff like that. Two things going on at one time. It's not really what the movie is about, but there is like some really clever things. There's a shootout at the end that's very reminiscent of The Untouchables. If anybody's seen that one, I'm sure they have. Another De Palma classic. And I just was so impressed with this. I had not seen it in so long. And growing up, I was more of a De Niro guy, but Pacino's come, I mean, I just never gave De Niro, Pacino the credit he really deserved when he has stuff like, you know, of course, the Godfather films, but I've always absolutely loved his over-the-top crazy performance in Dick Tracy. And just seeing him as I get older, you know, I have a lot more respect for Pacino than I did when I was younger, and this is one of the reasons why. He's really great in this. There's comedy beats, of course, and the love story really works really well, too. And they do definitely have some kind of some intensity. I think that there is a chemistry there between the two. Sean Penn is nerve-wracking in the best way. He's the kind of character that you see in a film and you wish you could kill for real. He's one of these characters that just drives you absolutely insane. There's times and things that he does that just are outrageous and insane, like I said. But yeah, the shootouts and the violence is pretty effective when it's there. Some really intense moments. James Rebhorn is in this, and he's perfectly cast as a DA, as you would expect him. If you see this actor, you'd be like, oh, that guy, of course, he's a DA, or he's always a cop or a politician. He's got that real kind of I guess you'd say authority kind of figure that you don't really like that much kind of look. Yeah, I really love this one. And Pacino in the very beginning, he does seem to be like going in and out of being like a little crazy, but his naturalism in here when like his interactions with Penn when he's getting angry or his just kind of when he's kind of underplaying it is one of his best performances. I think he's really great in this. There's like all these kind of elements, like crime elements that are constantly catching up to him and he's seeing everything out of the corner of his eyes and all these things. And you get kind of his like crime code, how it was. This was basically based off a couple of stories. The author wrote these books, and this is based off a couple of them. There is an interview with the writer on here, which is really cool, made just for this, and he seems ecstatic about it. And he really didn't know how to take the film at first, but I think over time he appreciated it and liked the film. Yeah, as far as the other features, there's a lot of old kind of classic features on here ported over from the DVD. But the new features here, I'll just read everything. We have, of course, we have a new for the 4K, we have DTS:X audio, which sounds excellent. And we also have, of course, HDR, which you guys will want. As far as the special features are concerned, we have brand new audio commentary by Matt Zeller Zietz, author of Wes Anderson Collection and The Soprano Sessions. Brand new audio commentary by Dr. Douglas Kielce, author of Brian De Palma's Split Screen, A Life in Film. And then we have... Carlito and the Judge, a brand new interview with Judge Edwin Torres, author of the novels Carlito's Way and After Hours, on which the screenplay for Carlito's Way is based. Cutting Carlito's Way, a brand new interview with editors Bill Pankove and Christina Bowden. De Palma's Way, a brand new appreciation by film critic David Edelstein, and all the Stitches in the World, locations of Carlito's Way, a brand new look at the New York locations of Carlito's Way and how they look today. De Palma on Carlito's Way, an archival interview with director. The making of Carlito's Way, an archival documentary on the making of film produced for the original DVD release. So yeah, that's really good stuff. The editors talk about kind of finding the film. They only read the script, you know, here and there a couple times, and then because the film changes as it goes. All sorts of things like that. This is just a great film. It's close to 2.5 hours long. And I'm going to be honest with you, you know, sometimes I'll come home after work and it'll be a really hot day and I'll want to watch a movie, but you'll start to doze off. Carlito's Way, it was just so refreshing to finally watch something that kept me on the edge of my seat the entire time, no matter how long it was. It was always constantly intriguing and I never felt the time, never felt the length of the film at all. And this is just one of my favorite watches in recent years. I mean, recent times, or honestly, in a long time. I mean, I love lots of movies, don't get me wrong, but sometimes you're not in the mood to watch them. But revisiting this one, it just hit all those sweet spots, and I was just so happy to see Carlito's Way again. I didn't remember it being this good. It is tragic and sad, but expected, and exactly what you really expect to get. But Pacino's great in it. The club scenes are great in it. It makes a great kind of double feature with Scarface, really. And I mean, people are like, oh, aren't those too much alike to watch back to back? I would say no. I mean, Pacino plays a completely different character. De Palma directs the different ways. And Scarface is so incredibly violent in comparison. Yeah, this is a great film. You also spot the villain from Ghost, and he plays the Rat Man in The Stand. He's a comedian, Willie. I can't think of his name. He's in here. Got to be one of his last performances, honestly. But yeah, overall, this is a really strong film, enjoyable, and it looks great on 4K. I love the cover art here too. It's pretty good stuff. But Sean Penn is one of his best performances I've ever seen him do. It's unrecognizable, and he's just so swarmy, and you know people just like him. But Pacino and Sean Penn, both excellent too. I'd really recommend this. Great score too. 1993, way earlier than I thought, honestly. Because if you would have, I would have told me, we said, when did Carlito's Way? I would have said 95, 96, maybe even 98. And then it said 93. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's crazy. And like, you're looking at crime films made in the 90s. And you know that, I mean, there was crime films before, of course. You know, just Scarface, I was just talking about it. But in that 90s, the early 90s, and throughout, you know, up to the early 2000s, we had a heavy influence by Tarantino with a lot of the kind of similar crime, tough guys, and all this kind of violence and stuff. And I do see some of that. I mean, maybe not De Palma being influenced by Tarantino, but just the idea that it was made in that time alone, because they knew it would make money. But Carlito's Way, excellent movie, excellent release. Looks brilliant in 4K. Sounds great too. The sound design is excellent. Okay, the next one is also by Arrow Video, and this is Borsellino, and this stars, of course, Alain Delon and Belmondo, and both are kind of French icons, actors. And you know Alain Delon, I know he popped in a lot of kind of thrillers from the time, and that's kind of where I know him from. Belmondo was in some like crime and action films that I'm not too familiar with, honestly, so this is kind of a first introduction. It's a French crime gangster film, and it's also a buddy film. And I had never seen this one. I had not heard too much about it, but when I put it in, almost immediately, I was like, this is also a long film. Immediately captivated by it, and I was like, this is a great double feature to watch in the same week with Carlito's Way. Kind of two different takes on the gangster crime genre. And we're so used to seeing, of course, you know, the Italian kind of mob movies or the American mob movies or the Irish mob movies. It's like, I am not actually familiar with just French kind of mob movies in that kind of sense. So Delon and Belmondo meet at a kind of early on, and Delon gets released from prison, and they're kind of fighting over this girl, Lola. They have this drawn-out fight. It's one of these classic kind of ballroom brawl deals, you know, where afterwards they're like, you hit hard, you son of a bitch, and they become best friends. After that, they're kind of inseparable, and they start off kind of small-bit crime criminals. They both have kind of a reputation, right? They're both kind of tough, and they both are good at crime. So, but they're not like, they're on the rise, right? They're like Benny from the Bronx from the previous movie. But so they're kind of on the rise here. And what happens is they kind of watch them grow throughout years and get bigger and bigger and bigger. And they develop their own gang, and they have all these guys that are with them throughout the entire movie. And there's a couple scenes where there's this really good gimmick where Belmondo will always flip a coin. And he's always like, hey, I'm lucky. And I love the end scene that pays off brilliantly at the very end. Ella Delon is more of the angry one. He's never satisfied. And he's told as such, you know, no matter what, you'll have everything and you'll just never be satisfied. So there's constant, like, they have definitely yin and yang, I guess you'd say, to a certain extent. But this goes way bigger than I expected. It goes way longer, and it goes to a place that I didn't really see coming. I mean, the ending, I kind of feel like that kind of thing has to happen in one of these movies. But besides that, like, I didn't ever think it was going to step out and be that big and that much action. And this is 1970. This is before The Godfather. Godfather 71, right? If I'm not mistaken. And this is, they say, before The Sting. So this is before a lot of these movies. And they're always trying to pull heists and everything. Before The Brinks Job, of course. But they're trying to pull heist and all these kind of deals. And there's some really kind of great action set pieces. One of which is in kind of a butcher shop. You know, meat behind, like, meat packing plant. All sorts of stuff like that. You have characters holding Tommy guns, shooting with one arm. This is a great film. There's good chase scenes, too. The streets look gorgeous. It's a period piece. Just glamorous houses with all the works and stuff. This is an excellent film. I really enjoyed it. I really like crime films, though. I'm a sucker for these kind of movies all the way, you know, anything, you know. I think crime films kind of always kind of have some weight to them. I think action has suffered in the last kind of decade or so, ever since probably, I'd say about 15, 20 years, action has been really poor, for me at least, you know. There's some good ones, of course, but it's just not my bag anymore, and I used to love action, but the action in these movies feels, you know, gritty and real, even though, obviously, it's a film. But I would really recommend this one. This is more Salino, violent, kind of great, kind of buddy, kind of tone too. And they talk about the score here. I'll read some of these special features, of course. We have in English or French if you'd like. New audio commentary by film scholar Josh Nelson. The music of Borsalino. A new interview with composer and film historian Neil Brand on Claude Bowling's score. This is great because he talks about kind of getting the right tone to it and how throughout the movie the score is the same, but it plays differently when it plays to the scenes, and that's really well done. And the score is great too. Dressing down, a new interview with the film scholar Elizabeth Castallo Lungan on Jacques Forteret's costume designs for Borsalino, the magnificent Belmondo, and archival extra celebrating the unique talent and career of the beloved French actor. Theatrical trailer, image gallery, illustrated collector's booklet featuring new writing by film scholar Jeanette Visadoux. Terrible with French. Archival essay by curator Ilsa Falco on the iconic Borsalino hats worn in the film. There's a lot of hats. There's a lot of style. This is a gorgeous film, a lot of good characters. I would really recommend checking this one out, especially if you're a fan of crime films. Why not give a French one a try? And it plays like, kind of like a mobster film, you know, more so not like a film noir or a crime film in that aspect. It plays definitely more like the Americanized crime films that we're used to. Okay, the next one here is an excellent film. The Postman Fights Back. It's the Golden Harvest flick, directed by Ronnie Yu, who most people would know kind of did The Bride of Chucky and Freddy vs. Jason, if you're watching this channel. But, you know, he had a slew of great films done in Hong Kong. What, The Bride with the White Hair, if I'm not mistaken. He did some other films, and he did a lot of action flicks, too. And so this one is The Postman Fights Back. And I guess what I would call this is kind of like Man on a Mission movie, but it also has a lot of Wild Bunch elements from 82. This is an excellent film. It's got, of course, Chow Yun-fat in here, who's kind of the biggest actor. So essentially, there's a postman who goes from town. This is a period piece, so it's really rough to be kind of a post office guy at this time, right? You deliver letters, you get ridiculed, people try to rob you. And he kind of, on the road, he bumps into this thief who's stealing something, and he runs into these thugs that are trying to get something from him, and he ends up having to help him. At the same time, as there's kind of like this gambler and Chow Yun-fat, who's kind of like shady and everything like that. So basically, this kind of really, you know, kind of high up guy calls them in. These guys really don't know each other all that well. And he says, listen, I want to hire you guys to deliver this package to this lord essentially, and we'll give you a crap load of money, six taels of gold. And they do reluctantly agree under certain weird circumstances, and they all end up together. On the road, somebody decides to follow the postman, this young girl, and they have to pick up their demolition, their explosives expert, who's a great character. He's this big burly gentleman who throws sticks of dynamite at people, like Sergio Leone movie, Fistful of Dynamite or something, right? So that's great stuff. So now we have our ragtag group of people on a mission, right? We have these five people. They run into another person and all sorts of things there. And it does a lot feel like Wild Bunch in terms of the plot and revolutionaries and all this kind of stuff and a Toltarian villain, all this kind of shit going on, right? So they're delivering this and they're told that they can't open it. And along the way, they run into tons of bandits and they decide they learn that not everyone's telling the truth, of course, in this kind of movie, and what's in the actual box. Also, very Wild Bunch, right? So there's a lot of great action set pieces on the ice. There's a good scene where they're like fighting skating ninjas and shit. Really good stuff. All the characters I thought were excellent, and it's brutal. I mean, to the point where like characters die, and I was heartbroken, and it's sad and it's dramatic. And there's super huge moments of insanity and action and just very much like I said, in the vein of the Wild Bunch. And I can't I'm like not. I'm unable to not love all Wild Bunch and Wild Bunch adjacent films, right? So I thought the acting was great. I thought the kung fu and the fighting was great. I thought all the things great. The story was good. The locations are good. The characters are good. I was really invested in this one, and it's not like a lot of the other ones. It's not like a lot of the other Golden Harvest or Shaw Brother movies. It has a different flair. It has a, I guess I would say, even though it is obviously not the most realistic movie ever, it has more realism, I guess. You don't have the kind of Wixie kind of fighting or anything like that in this one, which I don't have a problem with, especially when it comes to the fantasy or horror fantasy deals. You kind of expect that. But as far as the special features are concerned, there's a lot of comedy too between the characters, I will admit, back and forth, bonding moments. We have, okay, so we have the Hong Kong cut featuring original Cantonese and with English subtitles, export cut, which you can watch in English with an alternate score, audio commentary with Frank Jin and director Ronnie Yu. That's for the HK cut. Audio commentary by Frank Jin, HK cut. Audio commentary with Stefan Hammond, export cut. Archival interview with Chow Yun-fat. Two archival interviews with Lang Kar-yeon. Archival interview with Ronnie Yu. That fat samurai guy interviews Ronnie Yu. Original Hong Kong trailer, still gallery. Reversible cover with new artwork by Sean Longmore and original HK poster art. Yeah, this is a great cover art too, and of a great film. In fact, I've had three movies that I thought were all excellent right off the bat. Just a really good week so far, and really good stuff from 88 films. So that is The Postman Fights Back, and that he does. Okay, next up. Now, it can't compete with the sheer quality of the last three films, but it is a fun one from 2023, and this is Caddyshack. Yes, that's right. From Wild Eye Pictures, who else would release Caddyshack? Maybe Troma or Wild Eye. They're definitely going to be the people that are going to release Caddyshack. Obviously, a take on the famous golf comedy Caddyshack with, legendary actors Rodney Dangerfield, Chevy Chase, Bill Murray. Yes, that Caddyshack. So Caddyshack, very funny title. And this is not a slasher. This is more in line with mutated kind of golfers. Golfers, which is totally up my alley. Little creatures, little monsters. I love that kind of stuff. And yeah, this is a super silly movie. My one kind of issue is, these movies are really hard to deal with the tone because you want to be goofy and over the top and self-aware. But sometimes if you go a little too far, it just loses all of it. And this one flirts that line for me. Like, right? It is over the top and ridiculous and silly, self-aware, and intentionally bad at times in a way, but it walks the line of, being entertaining too. Sometimes those movies just don't do much for me when it comes to that. This one ends up working pretty well, and I really did enjoy it. So, got to give it up for, of course, Caddyshack. But this is the same director who did a movie a few years back called Sado, or not Sado Maniac, but Sadomaniac, which is a rape revenge film about somebody going around and raping the rapist, like completely ripping out their, whatever. It is a ridiculously crazy and grimy ass movie that I thought was pretty good from what I remember. But Caddyshack is relatively short, 75 minutes. You can't go wrong with that. There's some musical numbers, and it takes place all on a golf course. And essentially, we have kind of an exterminator, right? And he sprays these golfers with this kind of home recipe fertilizer, and they all go completely batshit. They're all little puppets with CGI glowing eyes, and they start to shred apart everybody that's in the golf course, including our, you know, our caddies who are there to save the day, and also the daughter of the owner, or the niece of the owner, who's a Donald Trump inspired villain, to basically tell all these caddies what to do. She comes in, and it's up to her and the caddies to try to stop these golfers. It's a really silly, stupid movie that stops completely dead at its tracks in a comedic dance-off scene, which actually made me laugh and got me. That's probably the best edited part of the movie, and they put a lot into it. It's really just a silly moment that I actually thought was pretty funny. They have a whole wall of dedicated to the caddies that die, and of course a bunch of caddies do die in this. The acting ranges, you know, it's a low budget picture. Some people are better than others. They're more convincing than others. Sometimes the actors are trying not to laugh, which kind of adds sometimes a layer of fun to it. You can tell the people making this, they had a great time. Now, people say that doesn't always translate to a great movie, but sometimes that's enough for me to kind of appreciate it to a certain extent, right? Because I know that these people enjoyed them fucking selves making a movie, and I enjoyed watching it because they enjoyed making it. It's weird to say, but I also would probably enjoyed it if they hated every fucking second of it, because it has a certain charm and stupidity to it. I love, and it's a fine line, right? She Kills by Sub Rosa Pictures, which I love a lot of Sub Rosa stuff, and I think it's a well-made kind of stupid comedy movie, but it's too self-aware and too purposely bad acting. It crosses the line for me, and I just don't find it funny. This one walks that line, and it dips back and forth here and there, but overall, I did find some moments pretty funny. It's also, like I said, a little creature flick, so that's totally up my alley. I probably did some of the same gags in my movies as this. It's kind of almost like, you know, I wouldn't say cookie cutter, but there's so not many little creature movies, but there's definitely a couple beats you gotta hit. Like, of course, you gotta have all the kind of creatures doing their little by themselves parting montage moment. Think Gremlins, you know, it's in here too, and you needed it. But that's Caddy Hack, very fun. As far as special features, we have commentary with director Anthony Canizzi, and producer Sarah Casey. Hopefully I said that right. Outtakes and behind the scenes footage, old Glory Hole commercials, that's the name of the golf course, by the way, Glory Hole, Caddy Hack rap, Balls Deep. There is a song in here called Balls Deep, which is really funny. Balls Deep in Love with You, karaoke, brew, break, drinking game, trailers, Blu-ray exclusive folded poster, Blu-ray exclusive case. Yeah, this is a movie watch with a couple friends. I think you'll have a couple good laughs on it. This is Caddy Hack. I enjoyed myself. Okay, this next one is from Well Go USA, and this is Gangnam Zombie Outrun the Outbreak, and this is a South Korean zombie flick from this year. And I am a huge fan of South Korean films, revenge films, horror films, whatever you want to call them. I am also a big fan of zombie films, right? Infected zombie, I love that kind of stuff. So I was like, oh yeah, well, South Korea really doesn't make too many really poor zombie films or horror films and thrillers or whatever. So I was kind of excited with this one, and I don't want to be too negative here. I know it's very hard to make a movie. It's not the easiest thing in the world, but I really did not care for this movie at all. It's very cookie cutter, very safe, ballless, safe, tonally. And I just talked about another movie, which I before this, about tone. And so, like, tonally, this one, it has lighthearted, silly moments, but then it also wants to be heavily dramatic, and it walks that line. It just never really works either way. I'm never invested enough in the characters, and I'm never laughing enough to really be invested here. So in the very beginning, we kind of open up with a scene that happens towards the end, right, to grab your attention and kind of put our characters and the main characters in the film in a very, very scary predicament. Boom. We have zombies attacking them and fight scenes, whatnot. So you're like, oh, how are they going to get here? Are they going to get out of this? We don't know. Probably not. But that's kind of what we're getting at. So in the very beginning, there's a couple guys robbing these storage containers or boats that are kind of on shore. There's a cat that attacks one of the guys, and he becomes infected with something crazy. There's also an opening with talking about COVID, right? The everybody catching it from a bat, whatever. Talking about all this stuff and spreading diseases, and now this is the new normal that we're going to be catching all these different diseases. The new normal, remember that shit? So as it goes on, he is infected. He's caught eating raw meat, and the main character and his love interest, who's also the two main characters, the guy likes her. She doesn't want really anything to do with him. He knows Taekwondo fairly well, and they basically work for this YouTuber that has his office in this really expensive kind of, I guess, office space deal. So they always go there for work. They witness this guy in the morning, and he's crazy, and he's eating like raw meat and everything like that. He somehow gets in this giant building. The owner of this building is, of course, just kind of greedy, you know, mean, stereotypical kind of villain character, right? So they get in here and there's a giant outbreak, of course. Everyone's attacked. The gore is not really existent. Everybody either dies by getting bit on the neck. There's not really any, there's not much blood either. And there's some fight scenes with the zombies that are okay. It just really does nothing new and it really doesn't have that much stakes. And the characters that do die, you're just like, eh. And it's just almost the same death every time. You came up behind me, you got me on the neck. I'm just sorry I didn't enjoy this one a bit more. It could have been really cute, and South Korea does put out some excellent zombie films. Obviously Train to Busan, but if I'm not mistaken, didn't they put out Zombie for Sale as well a couple years ago, which is a really cute one about a vegetarian zombie or something like that. So there's a lot of really strong zombie films and a lot of good films from South Korea. This is not one of my top picks, I'll say that much. There's no features on here. I guess maybe for the first time in my life I'm zombie fatigued, and I never thought that would happen. Let me know guys, because I usually love zombie films. I mean this, after The Sadness came out, I just felt like we're not going to get anything of that caliber, the infected zombie subgenre. So ever since that, it's just I've been holding them to a higher standard. I think, you know, Romero's my guy. It's all my favorite movies are all Romero movies. So like, and I didn't hold a lot of the new ones to Romero standards, but I feel like I'm holding some more of these zombie movies, these more moderate ones, to maybe The Sadness standard, to be at least different or entertaining or do something. It's like, if you're not going to be different or you're not going to do something so well that it can't be ignored, then what are we doing here? And this is Gangnam Zombie. I just can't get behind this one, unfortunately. I'm sorry. It is short, though. It doesn't outrun where it's welcome or anything like that. So if you do like zombies, you might want to give it a spin pretty quick. Okay, next up is a classic, and this is from Kino. They put this out. This is by director Robert Aldridge, who did great stuff like The Dirty Dozen, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, The Big Knife, Emperor of the North. This stars the man, the myth, the legend, Burt Reynolds. This is The Longest Yard from 1974. I haven't seen this bad boy since I was a kid. It was one of those ones that played on TV, so I'd watch it on television. My dad was a big fan of it. You know, he'd always quote it. He loved the line, "I think I broke his fucking neck." Of course, that's a line that he always thought was amazing. And he liked a lot of the actors in here. I think he liked these kind of movies, these kind of, you know, Burt Reynolds and Richard Kiel's in here. You got so many people in this film. Ed Larder's in here. And you got a couple actual football players. Just super memorable faces in here. You got Bob Tossier, whatever, from Hard Times, which is a film that my dad absolutely adored. He loved Hard Times, so we always remember that guy from Hard Times. Every time he pops up, he also pops up in The Deep. He's in a really crummy David Carradine movie towards the end of his life or career. But yeah, The Longest Yard is a classic film. So Paul Crewe is a famous football player. He's kind of washed up. He no longer plays. He's got his mustache, and he's kind of a playboy for this rich woman, and he ends up kind of trashing this car after they break up, and ends up in a bar, ends up insulting some police officers, getting in a fight, and he gets hit with a sentence into this prison. Eddie Albert is the warden. He's a fucking dickhead, and he has an amateur football team, a prison guard team, and I guess the prison guards play other guards, and it's kind of like, I don't know, it's some sort of amateur football league or something like that, from my understanding. And he wants the gold. He gets to the finals every single time and he can't win. So he wants Paul Crewe to kind of step in and basically train these guys, give them some pointers, and get them in tip-top shape to win this championship. Of course, Ed Larder is the football captain. He wants Burt Reynolds as far fuck away from his team as he can get. But also, who else is in here? I gotta mention, Unger. The guy plays Unger is in a slew of movies, including Emperor of the North and Evil Speak and Outlaw Josie Wales. I seen him. Another one of my dad's favorite movies. So it's like I said, a lot of these character actors pop up. Teen Wolf's dad's in here as caretaker. Great actor. You just got so many good, memorable characters in here. So what happens is, Paul Crewe kind of turns it down, but they start giving him some real hard times and everything like that, and he decides to agree with it because he doesn't want to spend his time out in the swamp for the rest of his stay in this shitty prison. But what happens is, we also got the old man from Hills Have Eyes in here. He's great in this too. So he decides to create an inmate team to go up against the guards. It's kind of a practice game, but what happens is the inmates start to get the idea that they really want to win, and Burt Reynolds starts to think maybe they can win. And he's got in trouble years ago for taking dives from a game. It's skimming points off, illegal gambling, all that kind of shit. So he's not really exactly the most trustworthy guy, but as the game starts, they're doing much better, but some shit happens. The first half of the movie, it's kind of like the setup of the Dirty Dozen, right? First half of the Dirty Dozen, you're meeting all the characters, you're getting established with them, it's funny. And then the second half is the mission. This one, it's the same thing with Full Metal Jacket. Its first half's boot camp, second half's the war. This one, but it makes better sense with Dirty Dozen, same director. This first half, we're kind of learned all the characters. We know who they are. They're in this prison. Everything's set up. And then the second, and they're training. The second half is boom, the football game. It's a great football game. There's a lot of good jokes in there. A lot of great moments. Some of the stuff is obviously going to be dated. Think about it. It's 1974, Burt Reynolds comedy football movie. More of a drama, though. Back in the day when, things could be funny, but not be a comedy at the same time. Think about it, guys. Hey, it's a drama, but it's got some laughs in it. Not everything has to be Christopher Nolan. Not that there's anything wrong with the movie being deadly serious either. But I feel like a lot of the movies, like I'm saying, like Kelly's Heroes is a war film with comedy in it. Longest Yard is a sports drama, but there's comedy in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, the movies just have a good amount of comedy, a reasonable, acceptable amount of comedy. Because people are funny in life, and especially when you're looking on the outside because you're not in that stressful situation. But The Longest Yard, a great film with a great cast in it. Game Ball, of course. I love Ed Larter. He's in so many great movies. He's a great underrated character actor. But Richard Kiel, his little moments, he said he was sorry. It's so funny because that moment is just great, to be honest. But anyways, I'd really recommend this. Maybe it's dated. I don't give a shit. I love it. Longest Yard. It's been years since I've watched it. But as far as the special features are concerned, we have audio commentary by film critics Alan Silver and James Ursini, authors of Whatever Happened to Robert Aldridge, His Life and His Films. Audio commentary by star Burt Reynolds and writer-producer Albert S. Ruddy. Doing time on The Longest Yard featurette, Unleashing the Mean Machine featurette, theatrical trailer. But yeah, I really recommend checking this out. A lot of good characters, a lot of fun. The Longest Yard in 4K looks great. I love these 4Ks. Watching old movies on 4K just kind of brings new life to them, and I love seeing that, right? All right, we're going to hop into those 1981 movies.
Woe be unto him who opens one of the seven gateways to hell, because through that gateway, evil will invade the world.
Yeah. a curse that'll live on. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago. In this little town, when the 14th comes round, there's a silence and fear in the air. Remember the morn that the legend was born, all the shock and the horror was there. Or the legend they say on a Valentine's Day is a curse that'll live on and on. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago.
Okay, the first 1981 movie is completely, utterly bonkers. This is more fantasy, horror, action, I guess you'd say. Action, fantasy, horror. And this is The Warrior, and the star here, this guy is from, of course, what was that, Primitives from last year, from 1980. When I say last year, I mean referring to the 80s, because we're going a whole decade of the 80s, and we're going to do some 70s. We're going to do all, if I'm still alive. So, but this guy was in the Barry Prima. Is that his name? Yeah, Prima. He's kind of a, I guess he's a kind of a decent sized star in Indonesia. So he's in Primitives and geez, this director I think did four or five horror films. He did another one called Ghost Hole, which I'm gonna watch this year, and I can't think, he did one last year too. He did, besides Primitives, he did another one I watched. I can't remember his other big kind of horror movie, but he did like four or five horror movies, and I by the time this is over, this 1981, I probably have seen all of them. Did he do Queen of Black Magic? I can't remember. But regardless, The Warrior, the 1980s action hero, is back. Where'd he go? So I don't even know how to go about this. But we have kind of this kind of group of villagers, and they're overtaken by this evil warlord who's an awful piece of crap, right? They're kind of American colonizing people, but they're just played by Indonesians with really giant, weird, fake beards. Like, think like if everybody had those big kind of bushy mustaches and beards and everybody looks like Chester A. Arthur, all right? And they're just so ridiculous with their beards, and they're clearly not kind of colonized guys or whatever, colony, whatever. It's fucking funny. So what happens is Barry Prima escapes, and he's a badass, and he kind of becomes this idol to the people. They're going to send all these badass assassins after her. The first dude that comes out is just like this giant thug of a guy, and there's this epic battle with them, a really violent one, really good stuff. But they decide to go get this. This next character is really crazy. And it's, you know, in typical kind of like any fashion, right? To send the assassins to kill the bad guy. I mean, to send the good guy. And so there's all this slew of weird assassins coming after him. That's a genre. It's over kung fu, westerns, crime. It's very, you know, very fun, you know, story point. So what happens is they bring this guy here, and his power is bizarre. He kind of can jump in the air and do all these kind of crazy things. And what happens is he is headless. And he goes and finds his head, which is in a tree, which is freaking weird. And the thing about him is he has these magical powers, and he ends up fucking Prima up. But there's going to be kind of a reincarnation, if you will. Some eye surgery, if you will. This movie is ridiculous and fun. The action's cool. The mythology is off the wall. I think this is based off a comic, if I'm not mistaken, or something. The original name is actually Jaka Sembong, which is the main character's name here. So that's pretty interesting stuff. But it's violent, it's gory, it has horror aspects, especially with the fantasy and the weird kind of powers that a lot of the villains have. But this is really cool stuff if you like Indonesian kind of action crazy flicks. This is from Mondo Macabro, it's the DVD. I love them to put out this stuff on Blu-ray if there's Elements or whatever, because a lot of these are long out of print, very expensive. I have a handful of the Mondo Macabro DVDs, maybe more than a handful. A lot of their Blu-rays, big fan of Mondo Macabro. Always, never disappoints, and they're super crazy kind of Asian output. Those movies are just insane, and The Warrior is definitely one of those, so check it out. Okay, we have a couple more from 1981, and the first one up is going to be Screams in the Night. Now, this was directed partially, half of it, by Ernesto Gastaldi. Now, that should be no strange name to anybody that's a fan of Italian horror or gialli, because Ernesto Gastaldi wrote so many horror films. He directed a couple, including Libido, which Severn put out not too long ago. I haven't got a chance to watch that one yet. But this one, Screams in the Night, it's never really properly been translated, so there's no real English title, but that's kind of the one it goes by. And this is a super weird movie. This is kind of a loop movie, kind of a Lost in the Wilderness movie, if you will. The second one of 1981, if you think of the Territory, which is also a strange film. So we have a group of people here in the opening. We have like this weird seance. You get a glimpse of it, I think, in the beginning that kind of goes wrong. And we have like five characters kind of wandering around these woods. They show up here. They're like, well, this is our property. We'll knock all these trees down. We'll take the line, everything like this. One of the characters is Luigi Pigozzi, who's in every other Italian film ever. He's kind of like Italian Peter Lorre. Of course, he's in Aliens from the Deep. You're damn right I'm drunk. He's also in Blood and Black Lace by Mario Bava, just to name a couple. Werewolf in a Girl's Dormitorium. He's in a slew of these movies. You'd recognize him right away. A lot of Antonio Margheriti movies. But so anyways, these there's two couples and kind of another person as well. And one of the guys isn't really, he's kind of in a strange relationship with this woman, like she's paying him and everything like that. It's really shady. Everybody in here is very shady. We have one girl who kind of is a medium, right? The wife of Luigi Pigozzi. So it gets really weird. And at first they're like, well, yeah, this is fine. And they're talking. And every once in a while they kind of ask, which is a character named Kristen who died, who basically is why they can get this place. And they inherited all these things and everything. And everybody's related to him, either was married to him or brothers with him or sister-in-law, whatever, everybody is. And we kind of go back to this seance, what happened where he was murdered. In the very beginning, we opened with a seance, too. So they had a seance here, which was back in the day, and then we opened with a seance to kind of communicate with Christian and everything like that. And they're kind of pulled to this area. So they all go here, and they all kind of reflect the moment in the night. They kind of tell everybody what happened, you know, and everything. And it's just, nothing really exactly checks out. As they wander through the woods, we realize they got to be in some sort of time loop or something going on, or there's maybe a slasher going around picking them off, and people start to get killed after a little bit, after kind of a long time. Maybe it's a little too slow for some people, but I like this. There's one character that quotes Dante of, I think, Dante's Inferno is what they quote, or Paradise Lost, whichever one. I remember them quoting that, and I thought it was really kind of prolific in this movie. You know what I mean? Profound. I wouldn't say prolific. Profound, I would say it is, because it really matches up with the film. There's a good use of wind. And I think they used the wind really creepy. And I did like this one. It didn't seem to drag on, even though the plot is essentially just people walking in a fucking circle in the woods. For some reason, it kept me very intrigued. And the ending is creepy and supernatural and dark. Dark as shit. And it just comes in 1981. I think it's a little early for this kind of ending and this kind of downbeat, even though of course we have like Fulci doing his Gates of Hell stuff and very dark stuff. But that's like big and super. This is like personal and creepy and just... kind of scary. I mean, the 70s was riddled with, you know, this kind of stuff, right? Let's be honest. I maybe, but it just doesn't really feel in place for this time. I guess it's a little too late, a little too early, but just dark, good reveal, good ending, and creepy. I like this one. This is Screams in the Night, or the real Italian title, you'll see. You can search it. I don't know if there's subtitles on YouTube. I have a copy with subtitles, but it's never really been released in the States. Very rare. Good, though. Very good. I know not everyone will love it, but I got some joy out of it myself. The next one is by legendary director Larry Cohen, and this is a TV movie he did called See China and Die. The second film that Larry Cohen did in 81, the other one is Full Moon High. I think that See China and Die is probably the better movie, maybe not as well known, but Larry Cohen, of course, did a lot of great horror films. It's Alive, Cue the Winged Serpent, The Stuff. He did other films like Bone and Black Caesar. Larry Cohen, very talented screenwriter, very talented director, a very big personality as well. So See China and Die, this is more in line with kind of a mystery kind of film. And whatnot, but it does have horror elements, almost like the character does dress up and kind of slasher garb to go after people and kill them, so we can have that deal. What happens is there's this cleaning lady. She's really excellent at her job. She's a maid. She's a cleaner. She's a middle-aged black woman, which I love because she's the main character. That's rare, right? When I think The Boneyard from 91, the main character in that is a middle-aged woman and a old cop. So it's like, I like that kind of, when you have like, you know, characters that are the main characters that aren't typical. And we have this middle-aged black woman in 1981 as the lead character. She's very funny. She's very likable. And she's very fucking smart. She's obsessed with mystery novels and books. So one of her basically bosses or whatever her clients is killed. and she finds the body. It kind of takes her back. She's in this kind of high-rise apartment building, and she starts to put two to two together and all these kind of things. She says, and her son's a cop, so she starts to get involved in the case when she shouldn't. Her son's trying to push her away. There's also kind of like another detective back there looking out for her, and James Dixon, who's a Larry Cohen regular. He's, of course, in one of the Maniac Cops. He's in, what's The Return to Salem's Lot, and a slew of others. James Dixon's in almost all his movies, I'd say. There's also a couple other familiar faces in here. We got Paul Dooley, of all people, popping up in this movie. So he's really fun in this, a smaller role. But as it goes on, like, she starts to put two to two together, and she realizes that, you know, this guy had ties to other people in the apartment. Maybe they had all went in on something. And she kind of figures out what it possibly could be. She goes to this museum, and then the curator of the museum is murdered. So she's on to something, right? And she starts to limit it down until she has this kind of, she throws this dinner secretly of all the suspects, and we figure out what the hell is going on. Now, the killer will dress up in kind of these kind of crazy kind of garb in something like a Chinese thing. And it's all based on kind of this statue, right? Like, what was that? It's not like Charlie Boy from 1980, The Hammer, House of Horrors, but it's got like a different element, right? It's not like the statue is supernatural, but you know that I think the cover or somebody would kind of try to make you convince it or whatnot. But this is really fun, really clever, good moments too. Excellent acting for what it is. This is a really strong television film with a really good lead performance and really good supporting cast. This is See China and Die. It takes place in New York City, which is a good location for Larry Cohen. He's used it many times, and it never lets him down. So See China and Die, recommended, good film. Okay, the next up is the Patreon pick, and I think Jonathan Wilhelm put this in here. Every time it comes around March, he always picks a Leprechaun movie, and he picked Leprechaun Back to the Hood, Leprechaun Back to the Hood 2, whatever it is called, Leprechaun Back to the Hood, that's what it's called. And funny enough, I've seen all the Leprechaun movies except Origins and this one. So now, it's been years since I watched one, but I remember watching two for 94, and I'm just not a huge fan of part two anymore. Three was always fun, I remember. Four was absolutely ridiculous, and five is the Hood one, which I'm okay with. He made me watch that. I've seen it before that. And six, so Back to the Hood. For some reason, I never saw Back to the Hood. So watching this, I put it in, I was like, oh, this is already better than expected, right? I didn't have too high hopes, right? And we also have Leprechaun Returns, which I liked. So I popped it in, and it has that nice little animated opening where it talks about, you know, all the leprechauns mythology. I'm like, this is kind of cute. This is kind of fun. And it doesn't really follow the original Hood. So I'm like, whatever. I don't care. Warwick Davis actually talks about that in the special feature, saying, like, none of them make any sense. None of them are connected. And he's supposed to be the same leprechaun, but I don't know. And he doesn't say, I don't know. He says, they just don't really make any sense, right? But it is what it is. That's a horror horror kind of character. So what happens is, in the very beginning, we have the leprechaun fighting with this man. And he seems to be a preacher. He used the gold, you assume, to build this like kind of help center for all the kids and everything. He's killed. The leprechaun's kind of subdued. And what happens is he's freed years down the line. Someone finds the gold, right? And they take it. And this pisses off the leprechaun. And there's a really great sign, a shot of him when they reveal him. We kind of take this tracking shot that goes up from the road, and we end in a tree, and he's sitting there in a tree. You see from behind, and he's looking on the neighborhood, right? The leprechaun has just arrived in the Hood. It's a really nice shot for this movie. I guess it's better than it should be, but the main characters are, you know, one is kind of a drug dealer, and he used to have a thing for this girl, and the girl and her best friend, and then kind of like a big pot smoker that knows all of them, and he's just like kind of a burnout goof. Kind of comical characters. These are kind of our four main characters, and there's other people scattered around the town, you know, some people that work in the hair salon and customers in the hair salon, and a group of drug dealers, which are the villains besides the leprechaun, of course, right? And a couple crooked cops, you know, ruthless kind of mean cops in this kind of Hood area, right? So leprechaun realizes they got his gold. They're throwing big parties, and he starts to infiltrate their parties and starts killing people. He kills people in really ridiculous ways. One person gets killed with a bong. Hey, gotta have it, right? Does have a lot of the weed carrying on and whatnot from Leprechaun on the Hood. None of the same characters return or anything like that. And these characters are obviously trying to get money and make it out of here. And after they realize the Leprechaun's after them, They try to escape, of course, and they run into other people, and they get picked off. Warwick Davis is fun in it. The writer of the film had a completely different idea. Originally, he wanted a bunch of rich, snobby kids to have to fight the leprechaun on spring break. Sounds like a lot of fun. And they came at with him more in the hoodies. It's like, I had to change everything. Instead of rich, snobby kids, I had to go back to poor, underprivileged kids trying to, you know, make a good life for themselves. So it's complete opposite, right? And anyways, they also talk about how he basically wanted the leprechaun to be less rhymy and more kind of like ancient and evil and stuff like that. And he talks and he says, and he's more like, I guess, Freddy Krueger lines that are darker Freddy Krueger lines or Pinhead, not necessarily, you know, you got me gold and do as you're told, that kind of shit that he used to do in like the other ones. Even though I like all that crap, you know, I grew up with the Leprechaun movies, so as bad as some of them are, I will watch them. I thought 2 was pretty bad when I rewatched it. I just couldn't believe it was that bad. I didn't remember it being that bad, but you know, this one I think is better than 2. I shouldn't say that. I rate them probably around the same, but I'd rather watch this one, or the first one, of course, or even Leprechaun Returns. Just something about 2 that just seemed like a crap fest. Maybe I was just being harsh that day, but rewatching this, I enjoyed it. You know, there's a special feature on there that has like 6 parts or whatever, where it talks about the Leprechaun, and it has Warwick Davis, has Gabe Bartolos, has the directors on there being interviewed, and love Warwick Davis, good sport about this kind of stuff, you know what I mean? And Gabe Bartolos, kind of a premier special effects artist, worked on this. He also directed a couple movies, Skin Deep, and he did Saint Bernard, which is a crazy ass movie. And Skin Deep's pretty weird too. Both were put out by Severn Films. Gabe Bartolos also worked with Frank Henelot a bunch. He did The Basket Case 2 and 3, you know, those kind of off the charts weird kind of creature designs. So they're interviewed in here. Anyways, I like this more than I thought I would. I just kind of a really kind of eclectic week this time, and I don't really disliked anything. I don't think I disliked any of these movies, really. I'm thinking, oh yeah, I didn't like the zombie one from Korea. That one I didn't care for. And one bad movie out of 10. Not bad. That's a 90%. Not bad. But anyways, we're going to get into these questions and comments and everything like that. All right. Questions, comments, concerns. Let's see if I can do this one-handed. So Ken Coakley, it's funny that you reviewed Wicked City because a friend and I were talking about Wicked City because he wanted to get it on Blu-ray. I saw both the anime and the live action that was made in Hong Kong starring 2 teen idols from Hong Kong. Jackie Chun, who is called Little Jackie because he resembles Jackie Chan, and Leon Lei. It was really good. In Hong Kong, even their entertainers with huge teeny bopper followings got to do cool movies. I do respectfully disagree with your opinion on the Conjuring series. All 3 movies are rated R for being too terrifying. In the first 2 films, you can actually see the ghost like you see the ghost in the Insidious films. I never get frightened by objects moving on their own. While I love the Amityville horror, it didn't scare me. While The Exorcist, Captain Howdy only got a few seconds screen time, that image is still haunting, even by today's standards. Well, I didn't say I didn't like the Conjuring series. I just think the first one is the Kidz Bop version of Amityville and The Exorcist and other movies that do it better. I don't like the first one because, like I said, the whole water heater scene where they're like, hey, we knocked this wall down. There's a water heater down here. Where the fuck do you not know where your water heater is in a house? They would have never been able to sell it. And it's very serious and there's no stakes because we know it's based on a true story and we know that, you know, they don't die. And like I said, the Amityville, I guess you could say the same thing. I don't rate horror movies on whether they scare me or not, because I don't typically get scared anymore. I mean, I guess I just don't care if I die. But I mean, some stuff does scare me. I'm just being a little, you know, hyperbolic, but I understand what you mean. I do like the second Conjuring, and it's because I like Patrick Wilson in it and the characters in that film. The first one just bored me to tears, and I just felt like I'd seen everything, and it wasn't done as well. I think it's a very approachable horror movie, you know what I mean? A refresher for people if they like that kind of stuff. But I haven't watched the third one yet. But yeah, so then he says, I have to admit that I am biased when it comes to The Conjuring because I'm a huge fan of and Lorraine Warren. Ever since I saw them in Fangoria's Scream Greats, Satanism and Witchcraft, I have always thought of them as fascinating. Their son-in-law does paranormal conventions in Connecticut, and he, their son, I think, this is his son now. Must be son-in-law. Does paranormal conventions in Connecticut, and he brings certain things from their museum. That's cool. That'd be interesting enough. Chris Harper, I love Roadhouse and R.I.P. Terry Funk. R.I.P. Movie Junkie Reviews 84 is unpopular opinion, but I always had a soft spot for Ghoulies 2 and 3. Ghoulies Go to College. I mean, if you like the Ghoulies films, I think it's 2 and 3 typically. Petrie Lambella, The Creature Wasn't Nice is a comedy that makes me laugh because it's not actually funny at all. The jokes are so bad and the whole film is so utterly boring, and that's exactly what makes it funny to me. Some scenes go on forever and ever, and the first I'm like, is this really happening right now? And then the whole absurdity of the situation of rolling on the floor. I love it. I don't use any illegal substances, but if I did, I bet I would have watched this a million times. I absolutely love John Carpenter's Dark Star, where the humor actually works perfectly, and I feel this is a bit like the movie's stupid cousin. like Scooby Dumb. Yeah, I do like Dark Star. Dark Star is a good movie. Ilk Vomit, 88. Prodigal Son is the Sammo Hung's finest achievement. One of Sammo Hung's finest achievement. A true classic of Kung Fu cinema. Warriors 2 is actually a loose prequel to Prodigal Son, even though though it came out first. Very cool. Video Homicide, Ghoulies. I love that flick when I was a kid. I must have drawn the cover art 100 times. 666. So, yeah, send me a Ghoulies picture. Adam Watson, 2914. I mean, just to inbox your own, whatever that you drew. It's almost impossible to get a completely uncut version of Ghoulies 2, one that plays including gore scenes, not including them as deleted scenes. Although I know I saw it once at a time as a kid on UK VHS tape we rented. It's one of my favorite horror movies. And somebody says, Daryl X4. I thought the MGM double feature of Ghoulies 1 and 2 had the uncut version. Adam Watson, I don't think it does. I've heard it's one of those German blues. That is the truth. The German blue has the inserts put back in, but they're of standard definition here, that damn chair. The MGM version does not have uncut Ghoulies 2, from my understanding. I don't think that's... I'm pretty sure the MGM version doesn't. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that the only way to watch it Blu-ray is the German one. Hey, Dave, this is Jesse Diaz. Hey, Dave, have you ever ordered from Sloppy Seconds? I wanted the Boot of Coonskin Blu-ray because I think VHS will never release it. I just wanted to know what the shipping was like. Great reviews and video. Thank you. I'm going to check out Angel Guts Films. Yeah, check out the Angel Guts Films. I've only seen a couple, but they're great. As far as Sloppy Seconds, I ordered Lost Souls from them, just one, and it came pretty quick. But one time I ordered a big package of stuff not released on Blu-ray anywhere, and it took forever. So if it's during a big sale and you order a lot, expect to wait a long time. But if you order one and it's not during a sale, I bet you get it pretty quick. Then we go Travis Linscombe, 620. I love The Fear. I agree with everything you said. Mondo never disappoints, but that was a standout film. Yeah, it's really well done. Like, that's an adult kind of thriller. Great, well-made stuff. Hudson, 3838. I suppose what I was looking for was justification from you buying the remake of Last House on the Left. I should have worded it better, LOL. I don't have the money for blind buys, so I got to be very picky. I've not seen either movie. Like I said, the trailer looked really good. I've not seen, either movie. Like I said, the trailer looked really good. I know you shouldn't go by the trailers. I do love Arrow, but I know they are hit and miss, and what you say about movies goes a long way with me. I mean, if you like the genre, maybe you check it out. I don't love the movie, but I have my reasons, and there's very, very kind of weird reasons myself, but I know a lot of other people feel the same way. As far as it is concerned, I mean, I got it to review, but it is a great looking 4K, and I'm glad I have it. I might revisit it, you know, to discuss and look deep into the movie again. Mad Science Films, while The Fear looks gorgeous, going to track that one down. Let me know how you enjoy it. But we got a pretty decent size update here, and I think we're going to hop into this. I might just do the unboxing and whatnot, just to make a short version as well for other people. But I have them all sealed still, so this might be a little sloppy. We're going to get into it. Okay, here we go. Some little unboxing action for you guys. This is a couple from Bull Moose. Good company. If you're ever like looking to buy some of the Scream Factories, and right when they go up for like pre-order on the site, go there, and sometimes you'll get them at a good discount price. I'm going to pull this up. Sorry, there we go. Here we go. We have My Demon Lover, which is one that I actually never saw. I think I had a VHS somewhere. It's probably behind me in the VHS closet. But, yeah, this looks ridiculous. I imagine this is for, you know, acquired taste. Looks fun. Looks silly. Could be cute. That's right. I use the term cute. We have another one here. And another one from Scream Factory. I typically order a lot of my, you know, Scream Factories from Bull Moose, unless there's a sale there. This is Night of the Comet from 1984. Is Night of the Comet 84? It was the last thing on Earth they ever expected. This is a cool movie. Always enjoyed this one. It's not one of my absolute favorites, but it's been a long time since I've seen it. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to check this one out in 4K. It's probably been 20 years since I watched Night of the Comet. Girls just want to have fun. Then we have another here. This one I got from Amazon. Not a great company, obviously, but hey, it is what it is. Sometimes you buy from the devil. And how could I live without Dr. Giggles? That's right, Larry Drake. And a slasher movie from the 90s directed by Manny Coto, who did another horror movie called Playroom with Shooter McGavin in it, which I'd like to see get a Blu-ray or DVD or something, man. I think it's ever had a real release. But yeah, I always kind of like that one. Dr. Giggles is silly. It's been years since I watched it. I had that double feature Blu-ray with Otis, and I can finally retire my Twisted Tales of Terror, whatever box set from Warner Brothers. because now I think I have all six of these on Blu-ray on their own edition. It's pretty cool. And now we have this big box down here. I haven't even opened it yet, but it's going to be for my Severn order. Probably a lot of Circus Peanuts in here. Yeah, my favorite. I love cleaning these up. Fucking Circus Peanuts. The most garbage shipping thing ever. I'm not blaming Severn. They work. That's why they're used, but they suck. Here, first up, we have Nightmare. I love this movie. Nightmare and a Damaged Brain, 1981, video nasty, the most repulsive, offensive, degrading, gory, depraved, and horrifying movie ever made, New York Daily News. Why don't you just, like, you know, buy timeshares, because you just sold that movie so hard right there. Yeah, it's 4K, man. Nightmare, the dream you can't escape alive. Yeah, I like this one. I've always liked this one. You know, probably originally it was so hard to find growing up when I was young, and it had a good, a crazy reputation. I want to say a good reputation, but when I finally did see it, it was one I had on bootlegs for years, and I always liked it. I might have had it. I don't remember if I had a VHS of Nightmare or not. I can't remember. This one we have Tales to Keep You Awake. This is a Spanish anthology, legendary Spanish anthology series on Blu-ray here. 31 classic episodes on 2 discs. Wow, that's so many. Very cool stuff here. Wanted this one, didn't get it. This is a, picked it up during the sale because I was placing a big order. You know, already going broke. Why not a little more broke, right? Ooh, boy, this is nice. This is sexy. Bad Biology. It's a nice little book here. I haven't seen any of these things yet, guys, so I'm opening them with you guys. Vulgar and Vivid, downright hilarious. This is Frank Henenlotter movie, of course. His last horror movie. I know he did another movie recently, which I've not seen. But man, this looks gorgeous. This is really nice. Nice little book here. I didn't love this. This is 4K as well. Yeah, 4K. I didn't love this when it came out. Willing to give it another release. And I guess probably some of that was the release. They said it wasn't a great release. What do we got else? Circus Peanuts. We have some flair in here. What do we got? Devil's Honey sticker. I ordered this. Such a ridiculous ass movie. Got a little Severn. I like those colors. They're cute colors. Then we got here Maniac 2, right? Love to Kill, aka The Last Horror Film. Yeah, The Last Horror Film. I always get the titles confused. The Last Horror Movie is the found footage one, which I do enjoy. How to Not Make a Horror Film by Judd Hamilton. Okay. Love that new slip there. 4K here. More enjoyable than Maniac. Get out of here, bro. They said enjoyable. They didn't say better. And I guess Maniac isn't the most enjoyable movie for some people. What do they know? Right? What else do we got? The Inconfessable Orgies of Emmanuel. Ooh, some nip there. By Jess Franco. The man, the myth, the legend, the Franco. And we're talking about the good Franco here. We're not talking about James Franco. Not that I hate James Franco, but I hear he's a weirdo. I don't know. I'm saying all those weird accusations about the guy. Now I'm just bad-mouthing James Franco for no apparent reason. Don't even know. But anyways, I don't even know the details. Just talking on my ass like everybody else. So yeah, love Jess Franco. Not seen this one. There we go here. We got The Psychic from Fulci. Love this movie. 77. Great underrated Fulci flick on 4K. A Ravishing Giallo. It looks amazing. The Guardian. This is a good film. Jennifer O'Neill. It's underrated Fulci film for sure. You know, you hear the same movie. I love Fulci. He's my second favorite director of all time. But you hear Zombie, The Beyond, Zombie, The Beyond. And then you hear Jolly for him. It's like, Don't Charge Your Duckling, Lizard in a Woman's Skin. Great movies, but The Psychic. It's a great one. It's a great one. What do you got next? The Sexual Story of O, a film by Jess Franco as well. I got butt cleavage there. I mean, I guess that's technically not cleavage. Oh, a lot of stars out of here. El Misterio Sexual de Ana Mueller Insatiable. I don't think there's any nudity here. I think this is the first time they put a lot of these on Blu-ray here. This is a Blu-ray. Close that bad boy up. What else do we got coming up? I know we got a couple more in here. We have Private Crimes, Edward Fenwick production, directed by Sergio Martino. Ooh, Edward Fenwick, Ray Lovelock, and Alda Valli, who's in every Italian movie ever, and a bunch of other things, too. Is she with Eyes Without a Face? I think that's one of her big ones. Suspiria, Inferno, Twin Peaks, All'Italia. Edward Fenwick, great, great jolly actress. And Sergio Martino, a great, great Italian Jolly Director. So Private Crimes looks cool. It's interesting. Love seeing Edward Fennick work behind the camera too, behind everything like that, produced and everything. Oh, what we got here in the last, but certainly not least, actually it may be, but this is Journey to the Center of the Earth. Is this a Juan Piquer Samoan movie? I think it is, guys. I think it is. Yes, it is. This would go good with The Mysteries of Lost Island for I watched with 81. I don't think I've ever seen this one, actually. I remember Code Red had the old DVD and whatnot, but this looks fun. This looks silly. Definitely would watch an adventure film by the director of Pieces and Slugs. I think that's all that's in there. Just the rest is Circus Peanuts, my favorite thing on earth ever, hands down. But yeah, this looks fun too. So that's my update. Some good stuff, some fun stuff, some stuff. Well, I'm out of here. All right, guys, thank you very much for watching. And as always, have a good one. Me.